wow, this is some serious shit, and this is something that only we gonna change.
Welcome to CKLN's Free Thought Area of the Airwaves. Let us take you back to Quebec City, April 2001. 34 heads of state were meeting at the Summit of the Americas, a photo opportunity, one of the first international visits for both U.S. President George Bush and the newly elected Mexican President Vicente Fox, another step toward the signing of the Free Trade Area of the Americas. Opposition to the summit had been fermenting for over a year. The summit ended up beset by militant protests of thousands of people and a labor union parade of tens of thousands more. This documentary looks back at those protests using interviews and sound bites collected by the CKLN crew in the weeks leading up to the summit and during the days of action themselves. Who went to Quebec City? Why? What did they experience? What did they accomplish? Stay tuned to relive some of the sights, sounds, and tear gas smells of that memorable weekend. Coinciding with the Summit of the Americas, unions and non-governmental organizations, or NGOs, also planned their own summit, the People's Summit. According to Corinne Rainville, one of the People's Summit Canadian organizers.
The People's Summit is a space where people are going to be discussing, meeting, talking about alternatives and talking about their opposition to the FTA and to corporate-led globalization. But the People's Summit is also a teach-in on April 20th and is also a major demonstration on April 21st. The People's Summit is a confrontation to the FTA and it's also a proposition or a proposal for alternatives. The message of the People Summit is that we do not want the FTAA and we believe in other Americas as possible. Basically, what's being proposed in all of the trades agreements that are being negotiated these days are putting the goals of trade and profit before everything else. What we believe is that if our governments want to negotiate trade agreements and more than our governments, if our society wants to negotiate trade agreements, that's one thing. But human development should be put first and the protection of the environment and human rights and labor rights should really be our first concern and not increasing profits.
The People's Summit headquarters was at the old port of Quebec City by the St. Lawrence River, a good 20 or 30 minute walk from the old city where the summit was taking place and where the protests were most fierce. It opened with a series of forums focusing, for example, on the role of women, indigenous rights, agriculture, communications, and labor. These were closed to the public but were well attended. Friday's teach-in attracted about 1,000 people and featured inspiring speeches and videos. The union-sponsored March of the Peoples on Saturday, April 21st, brought tens of thousands of protesters to meet at the Old Port. Carol Phillips of the Canadian Auto Workers worked hard in her union to bring protesters to Quebec City. CAW presented educational workshops to thousands of their members and sponsored dozens of buses. We spoke with Carol about how the political environment has changed since the 1980s, as Brian Mulroney was negotiating the first free trade agreement between Canada and the United States. A huge grassroots and labor-backed campaign won the hearts and minds of Canadians against it. She describes the disillusionment that she and others in that campaign felt when Brian Mulroney signed the deal anyway in 1987, followed by NAFTA in 1992.
We lost. Fundamentally lost in a number of ways. Not only did we see the free trade agreement go through, but we also lost because we lost a lot of our naivete in the belief that our parliamentary system was still working and that we could, through a good lobby and we could, through good arguments, change the course of politics. And so it was incredibly demoralizing. People were left without an alternative then for what to do. We weren't on the verge of a revolution. People were not going to rise up and rebel against the current system, but it was just so obvious suddenly that the system wasn't working anymore. Post-Seattle, we got rejuvenated again. We got re-inspired again because we watched student activists, environmental activists, social activists who were now using extra-parliamentary means in order to effect change. The street politics that had re-emerged were so inspiring to a lot of people who disenfranchised after the free trade agreement went through in the 80s, that we couldn't help but join in. And we've joined in. I mean, there's no way we've led this in any way, shape, or form. And on the one hand, that's too bad that we weren't there earlier. On the other hand, it's just fine, because this is a different kind of politics now. This is a much more multifaceted type of politics. But what that's meant is that our union and other unions have had to work on two fronts. First of all, we've had to work to bring our members along on the arguments that we have about what the trade agreements and the trade regime that's in place means for working people. But the other train that we've had to bring them along on as well is to understand the politics of the street and the new movements and the diversity of tactics within those new movements. And that's been a little tougher.
The phrase diversity of tactics Carol just used was coined by the Anti-Capitalist Convergence in Montreal. Known by its French acronym, the CLAC called for a carnival against capitalism on April the 20th, the opening day of the Summit of the Americas. With its Quebec City affiliate CASA, the French acronym for the Summit of the Americas Welcoming Committee, the CLAC pledged to disrupt the summit. They refused to condemn the use of confrontational tactics, and in return, they were often condemned as violent by other activists and by political commentators in the media. 3 weeks before the events, CASA's Hélène Valliere talked to us about their group and how they formed.
We tend on the day-to-day basis to work on concrete stuff, but now there is this big event coming into our town, and it's big, and we have to do something. We have to demonstrate that all these local issues are linked to what's going on with the summit and the FDA.
In Montreal, the CLAC was organizing in general assemblies that often brought together over 100 people. Jaggi Singh of the CLAC emphasized how encouraging broad participation was a key to their organizing strategy.
We talk about our alternatives, and often that means we want to avoid hierarchical dynamics, top-down leadership models, trying to empower people, trying to set up situations where as many people can get involved as is possible, participatory democracy. And of course, that's in total contrast to the top-down model that capitalist globalization promotes, and also, unfortunately, some of the models that a lot of NGOs and unions have, which aren't too empowering. So we have to try to implement that now, and that's one way we can raise awareness and be the change that we want to be.
CASA hosted two consultas in Quebec City in January and March of 2001 to make plans for the day of action on April 20th. 200 or 300 people attended each weekend session and agreed that activists would plan for three types of actions or zones. A red zone would be a confrontational, aggressive demonstration at the perimeter fence erected to protect the summit. Yellow zones would be more defensive, like blockades. The GOM, the group opposed to the globalization of markets in Montreal, planned a yellow zone at a different area on the perimeter fence. Green zones would be zones or actions where people would be engaged in creative or artistic expression or just demonstrating, hopefully without risking arrest.
What we try to do is make sure that the green blocks stay green, because there are people that don't want to be tear gassed, and there are people that don't want to get arrested, and we have to respect that. And you know, respect for diversity of tactic goes both ways, right? You respect tactics called violent, or you know, tactics that you don't necessarily agree with, and you act in solidarity with that, but it's supposed to go both ways also. So the green zone is supposed to stay a green zone. Now the difference between the yellow zone and the red zone, now it's more blurry. The division is more subtle, and we still have to work out how it's going to work. But of course, the best way we can work out this division is planning carefully the yellow zone, because we are not organizing the red zone. It would be very difficult for us to openly in general assemblies and public assemblies to organize the red. So we are not doing that. Autonomous affinity groups are doing it. We're just making the coordination principle clear for all the groups participating in the day of action.
One important ally for CASA was the Comité Populaire de Saint-Jean-Baptiste. This group took on organizing the Green Zone on April 20th. Nicolas Lefebvre described this group and its role.
Well, as a citizens' committee working in a neighborhood called Saint-Jean-Baptiste, it's been active for like 25 years, and we've been mainly active with civil, economical, political, social, cultural rights of like people living there, especially poor people. Well, we've done a lot of information and education about the FTA, the summit. We've done a huge campaign against the security perimeter on the basis of like it denied several civil rights. Well, because it cuts the neighborhood in half. There's like the fence in the middle of the neighborhood. There's several people from our group that were in the fence, and we feel that it was an illustration of the arrogance of the ruling class, saying like we could meet wherever we want, whenever we want, and fuck you. And we organized one of the green zone on Saint-Jean on 820, and we did a lot of outreach to our demonstrators and more radical type to make them understand that downtown Quebec City, there's a lot of people living there, there's a lot of like popular neighborhood, so it's not like downtown Seattle, you know? It's local people and should respect that.
Lots of people came up with other creative ways to connect the Quebec City protests with action in their own local communities. Sue Forrest describes how Ontario activists met in Kingston on Thursday, April 19th, and drove in caravan formation along the 401 to Cornwall at 60 kilometers an hour, the legal limit, forcing traffic to slow down behind them for over 3 hours and disrupting an important NAFTA trade route.
And people had gathered from all over in Kingston to emphasize that people were coming from all over to join in the protests. And for many people in Ontario, it was to do some form of action closer to home, because you know free trade affects us in all of our communities. It was great getting off the 401 at Cornwall and seeing the stream of traffic going after us, speeding up very quickly, so many transports.
Back in Quebec City, anticipation and fear were building as people prepared themselves for Friday's Carnival Against Capitalism. On Wednesday night, the media was full of reports of the arrests of a small group of activists who called themselves Germinal. Police posed with the firecrackers, gas masks, and bats that they'd found with the young men of this group, and claimed to have averted a major attack on the summit. It was later learned that two of the seven men in this group were RCMP agents. On Thursday, all the groups involved in Friday's demonstrations held a joint press conference to emphasize their solidarity with each other and to speak out against the threat of massive police violence at the protests the next day. One unexpected but very welcome guest was Hassan Youssef of the Canadian Labour Congress.
In regard to the Labour Group and the Canadian Labour Congress, we have been coordinating among all our affiliates that are participating in the rally on Saturday to try and ensure that there is no divisions among us and other groups that are planning other various actions. And in that context, tomorrow we will have an affinity group that's participating in various activities that's going to happen as a broad coalition of the labor movement as a whole, rather than an individual organization, individuals doing specific action. So that the point here is to say that we're in solidarity and recognizing the diversity of our organizing tactics, we will move to ensure that there is no division among their movements and try to take part in it.
Michel Robidoux of Toronto's International Socialists and the Mobilization for Global Justice, who coordinated dozens and dozens of buses from Toronto, expressed some of the fear people were feeling.
The siege mentality that is being created is the most likely thing to cause the problems. The police presence is so massive. People's democratic space to protest is so restrained and so restricted. And the very fact that people are protesting is criminalized to such a point that it is likely there will be moments when there will be problems. But the thing is, that is set up by the massive, massive police presence. It is unprecedented. 6,000 police in this city, a tiny city, more than in Windsor, which was a tiny city, a bigger fence than in Windsor, and it's such an immense overkill that people cannot walk down the street to protest. I think that is the issue that is here. Where are people supposed to express their opposition to this very dangerous, very worrisome free trade accord?
After the press conference, the CLAC's Louise Boivin commented on the media coverage.
We had two cases today. This case where the journalist want conflict. It can be conflict between the police and the demonstrators, or conflict between us and another organization. They like conflict. He just wanted us to say we are divided. And he doesn't want to know why, what are the differences. Just to know that there's a division or there's conflict. Not explaining the different position, not the debate, to inform people, and people could after that make their opinion. No, just to show conflict. For them, we are like a product, a merchandise, and they want something spectacular. They want something which is more spectacular than what the competitor does. I don't know, they play with the emotions of people in order to get their attention and to sell products.
But amidst the tension and the fear, there was also excitement. On Thursday night, the CLAC and CASA had organized a march from Laval University through the Old City.
I'm from London, England.
Yeah.
And I flew out here to come and protest. Because whatever happens here, you know, in the next few days, has a major decision on the rest of the world, especially Europe, Asia. So we must stand, you know, united together and make sure that the earth doesn't get exploited anymore than it is already. Well, I've protested in London on May Day.
You got tear gassed with us in Seattle.
And my first protest was in Seattle. With my friends here. Before Seattle, you know, I was aware, but I was pessimistic, and now I'm aware and very optimistic.
Now we're going to tell the story of Friday and Saturday through the voices of people who were there, describing their own experience. CKLN had a team of 10 people in the streets doing interviews and also helped with an internet broadcast at the Center for Media Alternatives of Quebec, the CMAQ. Some of what you'll hear is reports from people calling into the CMAQ studio.
Good afternoon. My name is Patricia Diaz. I'm transmitting from CMAQ and CKLN from Toronto. So I'm just going to start a little bit talking how and when this morning and how the march started at Laval University. We started getting together at around 10 in the morning. Affinity groups were getting together and organizing two different points. And about 12, we left Laval, walked down. There were two different marches, one headed by CLAC and CASA. The other one was GOM.
Okay, voilà la nouvelle. The GOM turned on Côte de la Pente Douce. They will stop at the bottom of the hill for a little rally and then move towards Charest. All is going well. The CLAC is moving along René Lévesque. When they get to Cartier, they will divide into the green and yellow zones. The green zone will travel south and the yellow zone will move towards the perimeter. The pagan cluster are still at Le Grand Théâtre. The river has started to flow. They were visited by a group of several hundred from the Sierra Youth Club who staged a rally and are now moving towards Basseville. En français, le GOM est descendu en basse ville par la côte de la Pente Douce. Il arrête pour faire un petit... Okay, at this moment we have a confirmation. There is a section of the wall that's been torn down. That's at the corner of René Lévesque, right at the perimeter. So that's the corner of René Lévesque and de l'Amérique. A section of the wall of about 100 yards long, that's about 15 or so of those concrete blocks, has been torn down, and the two marches have converged at the site, the black block along with the CLAC and everybody else. There are various groups there, and the police have formed a man-made barricade. There's a police line with shields, and apparently tear gas has been started to be thrown towards the demonstrators. We had a couple of people call in to confirm this just now, so it is confirmed. There's a section of the wall down at René Lévesque and de l'Amérique.
We have a call, I think, excuse me.
Greg inside the summit of the Americas building.
He's inside of the Palais des Congrès. Greg, qui est à l'intérieur du Palais des Congrès, qui va nous donner plus de renseignements à l'intérieur du périmètre. Qu'est-ce qui se passe? Alors, Greg, on t'écoute.
Hello.
Greg, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, what's happening right now?
About 15 minutes ago, maybe a bit longer, half an hour ago, I tried to leave this building, the Summit of the Americas press room. No one else was trying to leave, but there was a security guard at the door, and I asked to leave, and he says, I can't let you leave at the moment. 10 minutes after that, I went back to this area that I'm looking at right now, the sortie section, and there were quite a few people there, reporters trying to leave and complaining that they weren't allowed to cover the event, that they were being held hostage there. One of the reporters says they're frightened that if they open the doors, some rogue element will enter the building. Then, maybe 2 minutes after that, the door flew open and people literally fell into the doorway, about, I don't know, 15 people, and all choking and gasping for breath. They ran right past. They were obviously looked very, very frightened. They ran past all of the guards there, and people were scrambling after them, racing to see their credentials as they were coming in, as they were gasping for their for breath. What had happened was they'd closed the doors, and there were a bunch of people, like the reporters, desperately trying to enter the building, but were denied entering the building because they were frightened of opening the doors to let people in or let people out. So there were people stuck out there in the middle of the tear gas, like crowding around the door, desperately trying to get into the building. So many people came in all of a sudden. We're completely cut off from seeing on to René Lévesque. Okay. We can't see anything.
Can you hear what's happening from here?
We can't hear anything. There are televisions around here, and we see, like on the CBC News, we're breaking news. Protesters charge barricade at some of the Americas.
I was just at the chapiteau at the teaching at the Old Port People Summit wrap-up event, and there's been a lot of criticism of the teaching as being something that is going to take energy away from the demonstrations. But in fact, they were showing footage of they had messages from the Zapatistas. There was a Zapatista woman who gave a very impassioned speech. They're also showing footage from a lot of previous demonstrations where there's been a lot of police repression against youth and student activists involved in direct action in Seattle and in Windsor and other places. They were showing that footage and saying, this is what the youth and students are facing on the streets right now, and what are we going to do? And about 1,000 people from the Chapiteau and the Old Port are on their way. I was a few minutes ago, so I don't know where they are now.
Was that the entire group of people that were sitting there? Everybody got up and more or less vacated the place? And
pretty much. There's some people left. They're leaving the space open as a safe space. They're calling it a green zone. They're inviting people to come back if they need to relax. There's food and toilets and water. And they'll say if people are being attacked by the police, the labor people who are out in numbers are promising to create a human wall between the police and the people who want the safety of the Chapiteau. But what they've actually done is march from the Chapiteau tent through the underpass, occupying street intersections as they go for a few minutes at a time, blocking traffic, and they're heading to the wall. They just, as I left, just got news that there's a break in the wall. There's a lot of excitement in the crowd, and they want to head to the hole.
Okay, je vais juste prendre le temps de traduire un petit peu qu'est-ce qui se
passe. We were just up there, and there was like a whole throng of people that pushed down the fences. And there was a barricade of police in riot gear that started like throwing tear gas shit all over the audience. And people have just been like running back and forth because more and more tear gas is being thrown. Yeah. I think now the cops are like pushing us all down the hill.
They're kind of doing like the squeeze where the wall's to the left and then they're like pushing up from the right, so we don't really have that many places to go anymore.
So, like, what kind of condition is the fence in up there?
It's gone.
It's torn down.
Whoops.
Yeah, the anarchists took it down, which is pretty rad.
How are you feeling about the action so far and the demonstration, the amount of people?
I'm feeling good. Like, I think that people are great. And, like, I was at a peaceful art, like, creation party, basically, at an old skate park, and, like, free food and everyone just, like, creating things. And it was really, really intense and amazing, community building and powerful. But, like, I mean, it's always disappointing when you see what the cops do, I think.
I was worried at first because of the fence, like everything seemed really dispersed and not organized. But after the march, like now things are really getting solidified, I think. People are coming together.
Yeah, there were some cheerleaders up at, like halfway through the road that were telling people like if you're like yellow and red, go down this way and green, go down that. So people seem to be taking care of each other in terms of intensity level.
Well, I was there when the crowd confronted the fence. And a few initiators ran up there, started rocking it, immediately knocked over a good, as you probably heard by now, a good 50, 60 foot wide chunk of it was knocked over. And there were only a few dozen cops, and they weren't even right there. So a few people advanced, and I think an opportunity was lost to take space because the vast majority of the crowd, there was, you know, a few thousand people in that square on René Lévesque, just didn't really advance. There was a small contingent, I guess, that did, and then the Black Bloc people just started throwing stuff at the cops. and eventually we just got outflanked, a lot of tear gas was fired and stuff like that, although that wasn't even working that great because the wind was actually blowing in our favor for a while. But ultimately we got driven back. So it was kind of too bad to see that people weren't, I guess, on the scale of when it gets up to thousands of people, it's hard to see that kind of unity, like that organization actually happening. And that's too bad because the opportunity was there.
Vous écoutez la radio des Amériques et c'est maintenant le bulletin de nouvelles de 5 heures.
Hey Gretchen, you're on the air.
Hey guys, we're just out here having a blast. We're over at René Levesque East and it looks like Franklin or Francis or something like that. And essentially we've been here all day. The cops are still advancing, and people are still kind of playing baseball with the tear gas canisters. Every time they throw one our way, we throw it back their way. Are the police advancing in other areas, or is it just in the red block area that they're advancing?
So far, we're not exactly sure. It seems like the police did not advance because the fence did not come down at GOM. They did throw tear gas over the fence at GOM and tried to clear the area.
So they're going to throw tear gas even if the fence doesn't come down, because that's really interesting. In Seattle, they tried to say, oh, you know, we only tear gas those people who were doing property destruction. That wasn't true. They were tear gassing, you know, lots of people who weren't engaged in property destruction. But here, they're tear gassing just, like, indiscriminately. We've also seen some huge, huge slugs that they fired off a couple of rounds at people. One guy was hit in the head, was bleeding pretty badly from that. Another was knocked on his ass when he was hit in the chest. It's about 3 inches long, and it was really, really hard plastic.
Jean-François Hamilton, a member of the CLAC, has dropped by our storefront studio here on Rue Saint-Jean in Quebec City to talk a bit about the arrest of Jaggi Singh. So when exactly did the arrest happen, and what were the circumstances?
Happened around 5 p.m. Apparently, I wasn't there. I was actually coming to meet him, and as I arrived there, a whole bunch of people were completely couldn't believe what had happened. It's not even an arrest; it's a kidnapping. 4 undercover, anonymously dressed police officers kidnapped him and took him away. He was sitting peacefully on the steps of the church across the street here on Rue Saint-Jean, and he was kidnapped. As they put him in the car, people were throwing rocks at the car and trying to stop the car from leaving.
And what does this sort of bode for the rest of the weekend's action? I mean, obviously he's going to be actively participating in a lot of events.
We have to find out what happened, actually, and denounce it. Denounce the criminalization of dissent. Jaggi, what was he doing? He was sitting outside on the street corner, and he's being arrested for expressing ideas that are completely opposed to the free trade area of the Americas and to capitalism. And it seems that those kinds of ideas scare a lot of people, and they're willing to go to preventive arrests like that, like a snatch-and-grab type of kidnapping. This is the stuff of dictatorships. I can't believe we're seeing this happen here in Canada. Well, I guess maybe it's not too surprising. It's happened before at APEC 1997. They're trying to find, like, the leader of the activists who are here today. I don't know if this is a mistake on their part, or they just can't see that this is a movement that's much bigger than one person. It's about thousands of people around the world opposed to the system that we live in.
Do not panic. Do not run. I know it's your natural instinct, but please, soyez pacifique.
From about 9 o'clock on, there were a number of skirmishes all in part of the city, just up the hill from the CMAQ office, which is on Côte d'Abraham. And there was a concern as well that there would be attacks on those pieces of infrastructure that were part of the demonstration, like the CMAQ office, and in fact the medical office, which is just up the street and where people were going for refuge. There was a tear gas attack, like, right next door to it, and many of the people who had come to get away from the tear gas into a medical space were subjected to yet more of that weapon. We also heard that a little bit later in the evening, the concert space, which is in the art zone, which would have been, everybody knew that was going to be a place where people could congregate in as safe a manner as possible. There was not supposed to be any provocative behavior in regard to the police. It was just under the bridge nearby. So there was a big party going on there with concert, with musical acts and so on. Sometime between about 11 and 12, the police came and cleared that entire area with tear gas as well. So basically, anywhere where people were congregating, were gathering to be with each other and show some solidarity with each other, ended up being dispersed with tear gas over the course of the evening, and it went on until 2 or 3 in the morning.
And we have on the line Christiana Clemens, our own voice of CKLN, and she's down at the Old Port. Christiana, can you hear me?
I can, Greg, and I have to tell you, I am surprised. I knew there was going to be a lot of people down here gathering for the discussion this morning, but there are literally thousands of people here already, and the march isn't even supposed to start for potentially another hour. All of the union buses are pulling in. There's like more coming in as we speak. Really strong worker representation here today, unlike yesterday. On the other hand, tons of youth and the people that were really involved in actions yesterday have also come down here to show solidarity. And I would say, from what I'm seeing here right now, I mean, we heard numbers yesterday of 10 to 15,000 people participating in dispersed direct actions. I would not be surprised to see at least 20 to 30,000 people participating in this march today.
I'm here outside the train station with Tony Gilmore, a trustee for the Canadian Auto Workers Local 1520 from Talbotville, Ontario. He and his crew just arrived fairly recently. What do you think of the scene down here?
I'm overwhelmed by the numbers themselves. This is an excellent atmosphere, and we're just proud to be here. We have buses from Windsor, Sarnia, I believe it was Tillsonburg, London, and on our buses itself, we have Local 27 and Local 1520. We're so happy to be here. Everybody's pumped. We're ready to, you know, stand up for what we believe in.
What is it that you believe in that's bringing you out today to this demonstration?
Well, it's the irony of the whole thing. I mean, here they are protesting against Cuba, not allowing Cuba in, and yet they're saying because they're not a democratic country, yet they've got other dictating countries that are here, and I mean, we're not even, the people themselves from Canada don't even have a say in what's going on at the summit itself. And we find it ironic they put a wall around this whole thing to keep us out against our wishes, and they're preaching democracy, and it has nothing to do with democracy.
Speaking of which, that leads into my next question, which is about the police presence here. Maybe you guys missed that, but when I walked out this morning on my way to the Independent Media Center, the air was still thick with spicy tear gas. Now, I see you guys have all got goggles and bandanas on, so yes. Are you guys are prepared for that?
Oh, yes, we are, absolutely. We have goggles, bandanas. We're all carrying our water, whether apple cider vinegar. We are expecting the worst. Hopefully, it'll go across peacefully, but I hope we get our point across peacefully and there'll be no violence here at all.
Cass and Clyde voted to participate in the Union March on the 21st. We are in solidarity as well with these people and groups, and also because it's part of our mandate to put our message out, even in this kind of march, and to just to be there, to have an anti-capitalist presence in the Union March. So we felt it was important, but we felt also it was important to respect the parameters of this march.
The Union March route led to the suburbs of Quebec City, far from the summit or the ongoing fighting at the perimeter fence. Most of the tens of thousands of marchers followed that route, but Clark and Kaza turned toward the fence and encouraged hundreds to join them. Many others found their own way up the hill to the old city.
I arrived at about 4 o'clock on Saturday morning. We started with the main march, with the large Union March, but it became clear at one point that they were making a turn away from the wall, which I felt from a protester standpoint that it was the wrong tactic, because you're essentially symbolically saying that you don't actually want to confront people inside the summit, you know, and make them be accountable for any of their actions. There's one point where there's a large number of people definitely siphoning off from the main march and going towards the wall.
How did they know where to go?
We just followed the tear gas. You could see the clouds of it up on top of the hill, and you of course could hear the bangs as the canisters exploded, or as when they launched.
Where did you head to first?
Well, we just started walking along the wall for a little bit, and mostly it was very peaceful. At one gate, there's one police officer standing by himself next to an opening in the gate, and a number of protesters just chilling out, enjoying the sunshine and hacky sacking. And I took some photographs of some bras that were strapped to the fence and talked to the police officer briefly. Then, yeah, we just kept walking along the perimeter of the fence, and then we came across a few areas where protesters were running away because of tear gas in certain areas. And eventually I just went against the flow of all the people running away with tears in their faces, and I went to check out what was going on. And there they had a large bulldozer holding, pushing against the fence, and they had two water cannons and a large number of riot police as well. There was quite a large number of protesters, and there's quite a few bystanders as well, and also there was a number of media present. There was just an ongoing clash between various groups of protesters trying to stand up to the force of the water cannons, and then they retreat and come back again. Some people threw sticks and stones, but mostly the people would try to approach the fence and try to sit down in front of it, but generally get hosed back.
From your point of view, what did it seem like the sort of goal of the protesters was at that point?
The main goal seemed to be just to express anger against the police being there, and that seemed to be it. The wall was under no threat whatsoever. If they wanted to threaten the wall, they could have gone anywhere else along the perimeter where there's maybe one or zero police officers standing by.
These are the sounds on the Dufferin-Montmorency Bridge Saturday afternoon. For hours, protesters beat on fences and barricades. From behind their shields, police sent tear gas and rubber bullets into the crowd. Protesters responded with a barrage of rocks and bottles. There was almost no property damage whatsoever to the small businesses along Rue Saint-Jean or the Lower City. Protesters' anger remained focused. On Saturday afternoon, we talked with Pierre-Antoine in one of the green zones on Rue Saint-Jean, which, although it was soaked in tear gas, was calmer.
I'm Pierre-Antoine. I'm from the CLAC. We've been mobilizing since 1 year now. Yeah. And yesterday and today were the days. And it's amazing. It has been wonderful, great days. And I think everything is positive, mostly.
Yeah.
And we've been gassed. We've been shot with rubber bullets. Not me, but some have been shot with plastic bullet. But I think the power of the people is in the street right now, and we're scaring them inside. So
did this meet your expectations or surpass? What did you foresee, and how is it?
It's surpassing what I was expecting.
Yeah.
And not the numbers. Numbers, I was expecting that much, but the feeling, the way people, they relate to each other and the solidarity. And it makes 1 year that I'm with CLAC, and we've been fighting for the respect of diversity of tactics. And I'm non-violent, so at times it was like, well, why am I doing this? Why am I doing this? But yesterday I was at the front, and I saw why I had to defend it for 1 year. The Black Bloc was genial. Like they were great. They were throwing back the fumes, people with music. They were putting us up. The moral was good, so everybody was collaborating, and the union, not workers union, but the union between the people was fabulous. And you had mixed Black Bloc, hippies, ecologists, student, and it was beautiful, and everybody was solid there. So
today, just walking around today, it seems to me there's a lot of people from the city who are coming, who are not necessarily organized, but are coming just to join the demonstration. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I think also there's a lot of people from Quebec that came here, mm-hmm. just because they wanted to come. They were not sure because all the scary stories they told on the TV, blah, blah, blah. But I think yesterday, even though what came out in the newspaper today was only gas, bad protesters, I think people, they're intelligent enough, and they saw, oh my God, they didn't break nothing. They didn't kill, they didn't wound nobody. The police did, but the protesters, no. So they said, hey, we'll go. It looks all right, and I think it's okay. And people were people were very glad that we tore down the wall. That was something good.
Street fighting with police continued through Saturday night and into Sunday morning. More and more protesters were picked up by riot police and often by plainclothes officers traveling in unmarked vans. The summit closed on Sunday afternoon. As the helicopters shuttled the delegations to the airport overhead, protesters camped outside the Ochsenwild prison to greet those being released, and the Klak and Kaz-